You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Welcome to Shapiro World, and it's a special edition of Shapiro World. Normally on a Monday, today it's a Tuesday, of course, and that was a technical issue with me yesterday. But the reason it's a special edition is because David and I are joined by Wayne McCurry, who used to be a portfolio manager at FMB Wealth and Investment, and the person that populated Wayne on Wednesday, the very, very popular podcast, and it's now, of course, defunct. So it's a bittersweet day for me with Wayne retiring, but I think he deserves it, don't you, David?
No.
No, I don't either.
He's far too young. That's nonsense.
Well, talking about,
he's got other copies, but still.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the industry is going to miss a very valid and useful voice. And I must tell you something, Wayne. I was with Corky Coyman this morning.
Yes.
I was with Pete Major, and we were doing a seminar. They flew up for something this morning, and they couldn't stop talking about Wayne. And then what was also interesting is that there was a young audience and that was there, and they kept asking, what about Wayne? Where's he gone? Where can we find him? Mm. And even got some job offers for him. So,
I don't think he needs job offers. Yeah, go on.
The one bit of advice I got about retirement was the lifestyle's good, but the pay's not great.
David, you were talking about Wayne's too young to retire, and that brings us on to the other part of the celebratory nature of this podcast, is that it was your, I'm going to say it, 77th birthday yesterday.
Yes, yeah.
So I've been old,
but now I'm really getting old. So when I looked at Cookie and Pete and I looked at all of us, I thought, you know, we were all kind of, you can see that slower walk up the stairs, you know what I mean?
No, but look, I mean, Shapiro, Lindsay and I have discussed this on numerous occasions. I've known you forever. Lindsay's also known you for a very long time. And you look exactly the same as when we first met you. And in fact, Lindsay and I have speculated on this on more than one occasion. We think you look the same as you do now when you were born.
It's almost a backhanded compliment, isn't it? You look the same as you have always, but for the first 40 years of your life, you look like a 75-year-old. But I don't think that's true. But anyway, congratulations to both of you. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast was, A, to sign for Wayne to sign off, because he's explained to me how much his job committed him to media commitments, and that made me feel a little bit guilty. But nonetheless, yeah, I think he enjoyed quite a lot of them. But between you, you must have, what, 85, 90 years of experience? I don't know, Wayne, how long have you been in the business? I know, David, it's over 50 years. What about you?
35 years.
Okay, so we're talking, David, what are you up to, 52, 53 now since you joined the JSE?
52.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Wayne's 35 with double mine. You know, so
because my first few working years was as a accountant, you know, what I was trained to do.
Yeah, I was running orders on the floor, which wasn't what I was trained to do.
So you're both accountants, so there's a wealth of experience in the bean counting, but also in the trading side and the portfolio management side. So where did it start, Wayne? Tell us, because you're a Kimberley boy.
Yes, I'm a born and bred Kimberley lad, and when I went off into the army in 1976, I went home one weekend on a weekend pass, and I happened to go to my old school to watch a play that they had put on there, and I saw a very beautiful young lady there that I didn't know who she was, but I thought, in for a penny, in for a pound, so I went and introduced myself. And that was on the Friday night. So I thought, you know, what do you do in Kimberley over the weekend in the 1970s? And there wasn't many options. So I introduced myself and said, would you like to go out to the drive-in? Because that was about all there was available in Kimberley. And to my surprise and great delight, she said yes.
Nice.
So we went to go and see a really fantastic film called One for the Hippopotamus with Terence Hill and Bud Spencer.
Okay. Yeah. Like, we're supposed to know who Terence Hill and Bud Spencer are. Who are they?
Well, a lot of people wouldn't know who are, but they were spaghetti Western guys, and they were absolutely awful.
But, it was Italian. They were Italian. So these were the – what did they call them? The Italian –
spaghetti Westerns.
Spaghetti Westerns, yeah.
They were spaghetti Westerns. But she came from Pietermaritzburg. So when I was heading towards the end of my army career, her parents said to me, you know, would you like to move to Maritzburg? So I said, well, look, my dad's organized me a job on the mines in Kimberley. Can you get me a job in Maritzburg? So they said, no, fine, we'll organize it. And her dad was a bank manager. Mm-hmm. He knew a few people in town. So he organized me a job with the firm of chartered accountants. I only did accountancy for 6 months in Standard 6 at school. So I said, well, okay. So I went for an interview and I got the job and I joined there. And then they said to me, you know, what university are you going to study through? So I said, you got to study, yeah? And they said, yeah. So I went to UNISA and, you know, and that's how I ended up becoming a chartered accountant eventually. And then I came up to Johannesburg and I joined the predecessor of Momentum First Rand. It was a company called LifeGrow. And a good friend of mine there, was the chief. I was an accountant there. He was the chief admin guy in the investments division. And Shapiro will know this so well, where the Greg Blank story happened.
That was 1989, wasn't it?
Yeah, and one of our portfolio managers was involved in this, and he left, and this good friend of mine from the admin side said, please won't I come and help him on the admin side in investments because of this whole turmoil with this portfolio manager leaving. So I went and helped on the admin there, and a very tragic set of circumstances. The chap they hired to replace him as a portfolio manager actually committed suicide in our building.
Ow.
And the head of investments, Peter de Tour, still see regularly. I, in fact, saw him last week. A lot of us went out for our annual year-end lunch. Peter de Tour asked me, won't I please come and stand in and help with portfolio management? And that's how I ended up in portfolio management.
And did you take to it like a duck to water? I mean, could you apply your accountancy skills to portfolio management? Are they interlinked? I imagine they are, because David was an accountant.
You try to, but they're actually two very different fields. Accountancy is far more stable, if you could like to put it that way. You can learn accountancy. You can't learn investments.
Yeah. And from then on, you stayed with what is now the First Rand Group, yes. and just moved from place to place.
Well, I stayed in more or less the same place. The company's name just changed quite often.
Okay, David, you're the same. You've been with one firm. You changed once, didn't you, David?
I did change through mainly because we were taken out. Our firm was bought out by Societe Generale, who split the firm into two divisions, a retail and a institutional division. I was with the institutional division, and the French were all over the place. And this was when although they had bought us, very difficult people to deal with. And after the internet bubble burst and markets collapsed, they decided it was enough. They didn't want to be in emerging markets. They sold out of Singapore. They sold out of Brazil. They sold out of all emerging markets, and which included South Africa. So I was at a loose end, and I said, you know, I've had enough. There was deregulation. I said, I just want a little office, and I want to sit there and build up clients. And that was in the early 2000s. I went back to what is today Sasfin, and Alan Greenstein there was such a mess. Things were so bad that, you know, he couldn't give me a job. And I floated for a year and a half too. I don't want to even discuss it because it was an awful part of my life. But, yeah. But, I mean, just, it was unsettled part. And then after about 2.5 years, I came back and they offered me, they said, okay, you're on the radio, do our publicity. You can have 50% of the income you produce. So 50% of nothing equals nothing. So, I never had clients. I literally had to start one by one by one. And that was almost 20 years ago. So, and I've enjoyed it. But it's, you know, youngsters don't know what it's like to build up a client base one by one by one.
So tell me about your client base. And sorry, Wayne, this is interesting to me because I haven't heard this before. Was it individual clients? You maybe went to the Jewish community, people that you know and people that know you? Because Wayne and I often, don't we, Wayne, we talk about Shapiro and about – it's mainly about two things, how gregarious – Wayne, let's – before we get to you, David, we talk about
– Before David carries on.
Yeah, go on.
Shapiro knows everyone.
Yes.
You go anywhere with Shapiro, you'll know a few people. Lots of people know Shapiro, but I can tell you one thing.
Yeah.
All the girls know Shapiro.
Because he's a pest.
No, not at all. He's such a charming man.
That's funny. The one thing I always joke about the Jewish community is dealing with them is that they never want to pay you fees. You know, that's the whole thing. They always got to negotiate.
Well, we'll get to the other reason
I'm
that we.
Kidding. I'm just saying. No. You know, it was the base, but.
But it was just, there wasn't this institutional clients that you got. It was just high net worth individuals.
I want to tell you something which is so relevant. And it's also indicative of the country. Because I knew some people in the institutional market and I would go and speak to them and they would say to me, I'm sorry, we can't give you business. They said, because you're white, you know, we've got to give it to black economic power. I said, but I'm by myself. That's my business. You know what I mean? That's me. I'm only a one person business, you know, even though I was part of Sassman and that. So I decided, you know, institutional business, in other words, to go in that direction was very, very difficult because of the huge requirements that they were putting on you. And I couldn't fulfill that. You know, literally it was me. And over there, even today, there are only five of us that run my particular division within Sassman. And it's big. You know, when I say it's, we've built up a very, very solid base and it's a large business today. And a lot of that came because I made the switch offshore. Very early stages, you know, we started investing outside, as soon as they started to ease exchange controls. And so it gave me an advantage over a lot of other divisions. But that was it. So, yeah.
I would have thought that, again, from anecdotal evidence from both of you, you both stayed loyal, apart from a brief period of you, David, going off and having a bad time of it, but coming back now and thank goodness you did. But because of the regulations and the rules and the paperwork and the bureaucracy involved with switching companies, people don't do that anymore. They get embedded in a company because I would imagine, yeah. Wayne, you did very well and there would be certain people that you would speak to and say, well, look, Wayne, you might have said hypothetically, I'm moving to this company. Will you support me? And that person would say yes. And the same with you, David. But you said you can't do it because it is an onerous experience.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I know a good few people that have set up their own shop, two people in particular, and it is horrendous.
Yeah.
You actually got to, obviously you must be qualified as a portfolio manager and have all of those things, because certainly when David and I started, it was nothing like that. But I mean, that's not the end of the world to pass those exams, quite honestly. They're very reasonable exams and that's not too onerous. But the only way you actually can do it without killing yourself with administration is to do what David's done, is you essentially join a company with all the compliance and all the ledger and everything done as a portfolio manager. Then you essentially just enter into a profit-sharing arrangement with this other company. So even though you're running your own business, you're essentially piggybacking off someone else's license. It's in fact the only way you can do it.
Mm. And the compliance today, Lindsay, is you have no idea how draining it is. Yeah. You know, in the olden days, we used to have maybe a compliance officer. Today, you have no idea how many people are in compliance. And in fact, at the moment, the most annoying thing that's happening to me, I keep getting these emails to tell me to do my cyber training. You know, in other words,
your training.
My training for cyber.
And I must say,
and it's one course of the, you know, and they get cross because they have to, from a compliance point of view, fulfill that. I have to do it. Otherwise, I get the firm into trouble.
Yeah, David obviously works for a bank, same as I worked for a bank. And one of my true pleasures 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, is I got a letter saying, you have to complete you have training to complete. And I could just reply back and say, I'm retiring in 2 days' time.
So you
that was one of the true highlights. Is that, of course, the same as David, I saw, you've got training to complete. Yeah. And I could just reply back, and I've got to finish it by the end of November, and I've said I'm retiring the end of October. Thank you very much.
So you had to sit in a class with other people, presumably of all different age all groups online. And all different backgrounds, to learn all about cybersecurity or something.
All of our training was online.
Oh, I see. Okay. Gosh. What a world.
It's ongoing, and Poppy, and all of these things.
It's probably right and probably justified, but it was a lot of hours you had to put in, and yet with all this compliance and all this regulation, you know, it doesn't stop the Ponzi schemes. It doesn't stop any of this. Eh?
No, everything. We'll come to what's changed in a moment.
Regulates.
But just very briefly, because I don't want to get this, I don't want to go on a love fest nostalgia trip here, but you've obviously got respect for each other. Where did you first meet? Was it, I mean, I can remember you being on TV up until a few weeks ago. I can't remember now. But anyway, you were always on that show with Giulietta Televi, and that was always good fun. But where did you first meet? At a conference or something? David?
I don't know. I just
can't
knew,
remember.
I remember.
It was early 90s.
Yeah. Wayne was with RMB. He was a portfolio manager there. And always clever. I've got to say there's something about Wayne.
Here we go.
There's one thing that – no, this is not – you know what?
No, and I like this.
The thing that people miss is that Wayne has got the most incredible brain. Giulietta will ask him a question, and he'll just sit – and I'm saying, oh, God, how am I going to answer this one? And Wayne will just say, there are 3 points. I said, how do you know there are 3 points? You know what I mean? Where do you get this from? And it's and methodically he'd go through number one, number two, number three. You know, I'm still grasping, saying, oh God, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to answer this. And he had that one, and I mean it, you know, he had this incredible, clear and thorough line of thought. Whatever he answered, you know, everything like that.
Thanks for that, David. But I mean, just as another comment, Lindsay and I have also discussed your knowledge base. And we also say, you know, he's actually quite smug in his knowledge base.
I claim the fifth on this one, by the way. But no,
and I'm saying that's what people love about Wayne and what they came to, because the one thing, if I may say, about the two of us, there was never, I don't think on any show, either Wayne or myself wanted to brag. You know, you never wanted to show we were cleverer than the rest and kind of quote earnings to the fourth decimal point or try and brag, you know, use words that no one could understand and fancy language.
That's one thing I learned in investments at a very young age. There's two ways you can be an investment person. You can either be, you know, have a lot of hubris, you know, be very arrogant about your knowledge base and how good you are, but that you soon fall short on that because, quite honestly, in investments, no one's a genius. Eh? Everyone makes mistakes, and plenty. Or the other way is You talk in normal language. You try and explain things. You don't talk down to people. Mm-hmm. You know, I know what I'm doing. You're stupid. So therefore you must give me your money so I can invest it for you better than what you can do that. So, I mean, it's always been my sort of approach to clients and to the, you know, the general audience is you don't have to impress people or how clever you are. You've got to, your primary objective is to explain things logically that people can understand.
Yes, and you do that very well, which is why, as I said, this is a bittersweet podcast that we're conducting now because I won't have this again. But David, just to embellish the point that you said, on a Wednesday, when I say getting ready for Wayne on Wednesday, I've read a bit during the day, etc., but I'm not really sure what the format of the program is going to be, the podcast is going to be, because I know that Wayne is going to come up with something. I'll say, well, what about Platinum Group Metals? What about the tech sector on the NASDAQ, etc.? And he'll come up with it. I'll go make a cup of tea, get myself a biscuit, come back, and he's still talking.
Yeah.
I don't need to be there. It's almost just
that's also one thing that I've also understood in my investment career. Between David and myself, and there's one other individual,
yeah,
chap who works for a very, very well-known asset management company who also heads their offices in Melrose Arch, very well-known, big asset management company. If you take the three of us, you should never be short of words. Because we can wing it, we can swing it, we can waffle away forever on
many subjects. Kevin Lings.
I didn't want to say his name. I love doing presentations with Kevin because you could sit back.
No, he is.
Is he still Stan Lib?
Yeah.
Is he?
He's
a great economist. I really enjoy his stuff.
But
yeah.
He reduces his views. Yes, he said. Whenever you invite him for a conference or to speak, you've got to give him an hour and a half. And he'll tell you, listen, I can't do it in less than 1.5 hours.
Can't do it in less time than that, yeah.
So be prepared. But everything he does is easy to understand. His charts are one-line charts, and he gets to the point.
Mm.
But very enjoyable. But Wayne, yeah, you've got to give him 1.5 hours.
We've got the Mutual Appreciation Society. I'm in the middle of it. But one thing I will say, David, is that despite the fact that Wayne talks a lot, and when I say a lot of sense, and also at the end of our programs, which I'll come to in a moment, we talk about food, but that's another matter. But your name often comes up. Firstly, and we've already mentioned this, or Wayne has, you are a well-liked individual, and ladies apparently enjoy your charm and the fact that you know how to talk to a woman. But the other thing is the way you dress. Now, Wayne won't mind me saying this. He buys his clothes from Pick and Pay.
Yeah.
And he'll say, I don't care, Lindsay. I'm going into my garage, my factory, for my other hobby. And I don't need to look natty, but Shapiro is walking down Fifth Avenue and going into Giorgio Armani or something like that.
Shapiro is a natty dresser.
He's natty.
But I'll tell you two very quick stories about Shapiro. Shapiro and I once went on we did presentations in Durban, and we meet at O.R. Tambo here, and we're flying to Durban, and we're standing in the queue to board the aeroplane. And just in front of us was a group of young ladies, early 20s, and they were part of a percussion band called Chicks with Sticks. So they played drums and cymbals and that. And very, very pretty girls, very pretty girls. Before we boarded the aeroplane, Shapiro knew all their names and their life history. This is standing in the queue to go through the gate. We get to the aeroplane. Chicks with Sticks. And then we're at that Durban, and we were on the beachfront, and Shapiro and I got up early, so we said, it was summer, it was lovely, let's go to the beachfront and go and find a coffee there. So we found a place that does skiing lessons. You know, the moms and dads drop off their youngsters to come to learn to ski before school starts. They go surfing. And there was this very young... a waitress in a little beach outfit, sort of thing, whatever. But a pretty girl, and Shapiro and I were sitting. Within 10 minutes, this lady was sitting next to Shapiro, and every other patron there didn't get a cup of coffee or a toasted sandwich for the next half an hour.
If Linda Shapiro is listening to this podcast this evening, then it's all good natured stuff, Linda. Don't worry.
It's look, I always tease David and say the reason why young girls like him so much is he's very much the grandfather figure.
Ah, I see. Yes. Yes, exactly. The wise man with the twinkle in his eye, yes. I see what you mean. Now, let's get on to the markets again, finally, before a quick food story from Wayne. Wayne, when you sat down at your desk when that tragedy occurred at your office and it gave you an opportunity to become a portfolio manager, when you sat down at your desk, you had certain principles that were instilled in you from the training that you'd had. And over the decades that you've been in the business, things have changed. The dissemination of information, the screens, the products, the ETFs and everything, the proliferation of products and the complication of financial services and financial markets. The principles still must stay the same. No matter how many things change extraneously, the principles of investing are the same as when you first started.
Yeah. Look, the biggest single change, obviously, what you invest in changes all the time and always will. You know, shares go up, shares go down, sectors, new ideas, all of that. It's been that's investments. So what really the fundamental change has been the dissemination of information.
There you go.
You know, you used to rely on magazines, the newspaper, but especially the brokers. You know, you very seldom met company management. Now you get all that information yourself, and it's readily available via SENS, via the company's websites. I mean, there weren't websites. David will remember, and he might even remember the chap's name. In the early 90s, there was you didn't have a chart on your computer of the price of a share.
Yeah, Trendline.
The chap used to chap used to manually draw it on graph paper. And then photocopy it and send it to you each month so you had the last 5 years' history of share prices. You didn't even have all of that. So the information's a lot more readily available, obviously, and there's a lot more analytical tools you can use which you didn't have. But everything's changed, but everything has stayed the same.
You know, Lindsay, my story, and when you talk about communication, I'll just – extend this very briefly. Mm-hmm. When I went onto the floor, we used to deal with our counterparts in the UK through telex. And I mean, it was very expensive. And if you know, where you had a direct line with your counterpart. So you were, you know, you couldn't afford too many lines. But we also used to use coded telegrams because there was no direct dialing. So there was the time that it took. Even if we had a direct line, there was like a 5 minute to 10 minute break before you sent a message through to your counterpart overseas and he came back. And if you sent telegrams, it was like 30 minutes. And then once they brought in direct dialing, it was, you know, you could just phone your mates on the London Stock Exchange and you got automatic, you know, it took away arbitrage. It took away the trading of price differences between those markets. But and that only came in 1978, direct dialing, where you can actually just pick up a phone and dial London and so on. And then, of course, as Wayne said, we had William Merola, who was in our library. William Merola would take the Star, the Rand Daily Mail, Financial Mail, or whatever publications were there, the Financial Gazette. There were quite a few publications, and he would go through it every day and cut out articles, cut them out and stick them in a file, you know, an article or the results and so on. And then we'd all have a separate file where we would keep the balance sheets. Now, if you wanted that information, you had to come to our library, you know, to see it. And it was only well into the 90s that things started to change.
We had a library with probably 4 or 5 staff members in it, and it took up huge floor space. But our library was our librarian was a sweet lady with one drawback. Every Friday lunchtime, she went across the road to the hotel and had a and had a good couple of drinks there and came back. So if you wanted anything on a Friday afternoon after lunch, forget it. Wait till Monday.
You're taking me back now, because when I was working for a commodity company in Sandton, the owner of the company, he'd go into his office and there were these big pieces of graph paper on his wall, and he would come in every day and get the closing prices from the Chicago Board of Trade, etc. Let's say, for example, soybeans. He'd get his pencil, he'd sharpen his pencil, and it would be, he'd draw in a line. It's a bar graph. Put in the high and the low, obviously, which was a vertical line, and then a little dash to the left where the market opened, and a little dash to the right of that line where it closed. And every single day he would do this religiously, because, as you said, there was nothing on a screen.
But David, I'm sure you'll remember there was this chap who used to advertise, used to put little photographs in the Financial Mail and maybe the newspapers of him sitting outside under a sun umbrella selling this service. Man, what was the guy's name?
I can't remember them now. I know anyway, Trendline. Doesn't matter. Trendline was what they called
them. No, this was a one individual person. This one?
You know, Lindsay, we used to use point and figure.
Yes.
Norton crosses.
Yeah.
So you needed, before you even plotted, it depended on what your scale was. You would only, if it was a 3-point or 3-point reversal or 3-point, you know, so, and those were very difficult graphs to understand, you know, not the line graphs that we have today.
And there was no such thing as a linear graph. Everything was, you know, purely sequential. There was no linear graph. So, you know, a 100-point move off a base of 100 shows the same as a 100-point move off the base of 5,000.
Gentlemen, it's time for Wayne to sign off finally. I mean, he'll be back for a couple of interviews, I'm sure, over the years. But if we're still here, David and myself. But Wayne, what David and I do on a Monday, which is when normally Shapiro World is recorded, we talk about football afterwards. And I know you're not a football supporter. David, what Wayne and I talk about once we finish with the financial market nonsense is we talk about food. Now, Wayne, you said you had your Christmas party a little bit earlier, in my opinion, but nonetheless, did you have a farewell do? And if so, did you do yourself proud with a really good feast?
Well, my main farewell lunch is still coming up, but I do, however, have a very good food story to tell.
Oh, good.
All of my old colleagues from Momentum / First Rand, there's a group of, I don't know, 12, 14 of us, and we go out to lunch regularly every year. And now there's only one person of that group still working. There were two, but now there's only one person of that group still working. So we went to an Italian restaurant in Pretoria. This is about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that, a week ago. And it was recommended. So we have 1 year in Pretoria because lots of chaps are based there, and then 1 year in Johannesburg. And we've been to some lovely places, make no mistake. But this year we went to an Italian restaurant just off the Garsfontein off-ramp, so it's very close to the highway. And I thought, Italian, okay, it's not my favorite, but, you know, it's not my choice. It was the Pretoria contingent's choice. And we went there, and the chap came through, the owner of the restaurant, and said, you know, he has our specials and everything. And then he mentioned this T-bone steak that they put a salt and pepper rub on, and then they grilled it in the pizza oven. It was the most delicious ever, because the inside was nice and sort of medium rare, but the outside was crispy and well done with the salt and pepper rub on it and some other spices and stuff. It was truly delicious. And, you know, normally I'm not a big T-bone steak fan, because normally the non-fillet side can be a little bit tough. This was absolutely fantastic. So we had the most fun afternoon. I mean, that's really just reminiscing about, let's call it the old days, you know, when the company started. Now we all got together, and, you know, other colleagues that we worked with, the successful ones and the not so successful ones. So it's a very memorable occasion once a year. We'll be doing it now for a very long time, and we'll hopefully continue to do it also for a long time. So it was really a nice afternoon. But then the end of this month, I've got my even though I've stopped working, I've got my real farewell lunch coming up on the 29th.
Hopefully you'll have an influence on where you go, maybe the Troyville Hotel or something like that, Wayne. What do you think?
We're going to a place like that, but not the Troyville. The Troyville's an absolutely magnificent place. I mean, as we've spoken about on many occasions, the family of Nando's have bought the company, bought the Troyville, and they've really shaken the place up. It's very, very, it's really nice. And the menu is extensive. I mean, it's got one of the biggest menus I've ever seen. And no matter what you order on there, they say it's available. You don't worry, they've got it.
Very good. Wayne, we've been speaking on the radio and television and podcasts for so many years. Thank you so much for your unstinting support. And although it's a duty of yours, I know you do enjoy it sometimes as well. So thank you very much. And very good luck with your retirement and your cars and enjoying yourself. As for you, David, I'll be pestering you again on Thursday for the 5 o'clock shadow, and maybe in 13 years' time, when you're 90, you might actually retire as well, which will also be a very, very sad day, and we'll get Wayne back to reminisce again.
We can continue this conversation because I've got three of my grandchildren running wild here because we're looking after them. Well, halfway looking after them. And I've got to find an excuse to not get out of this
room. Sorry, your excuse has run out, David. You've had 35 minutes of it, so off you go and be a good grandfather, just like you are with the young ladies at airports.
I must just say thank you very, very much, and I really appreciate it, David, as well, all the kind words. Mm. And I will also say that, I mean, we've had a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun over the years. Mm. And I mean, that is one of the things that I'm going to miss is talking to people about investments. And you never know what might happen into the future. But for now, you know, being out of the investment field and sort of not being directly involved in it, I think this is the best decision for me. But, you know, as you said, you never know what happens.
Well, whatever happens, we'll be here for you, Wayne. Wayne McCurry, formerly F&B Wealth and Investment, and now a gentleman of leisure, David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And that was a special edition of Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.